Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Dev Team. I'm Mark Onsman.
I'm Daryl Kilzer.
And I'm Jake Overall.
We're a group of developers and bootcamp instructors here to help you in joining the world as a software developer. Whether you're a self-taught developer, bootcamp grad, or a CS student, we're here to help you fill in some of the knowledge you need to grow in your role as a junior developer.
In this episode of The Dev Team, Jake steps out and we've invited Tim to join us. Tim is an assistant instructor here at CodeWorks, and in the news we'll be talking to us about some of the recent news for him regarding the Microsoft certifications. But first, I will start off with the word of the day, proxy objects, and finally a chat with Daryl on subscription-based software. All right, guys. Well, first off, welcome, Tim. Thanks for joining us today. Jake had to be out, so you jumped in with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to start off today with talking a little bit about the word of the day. And the word of the day I chose was proxy objects. So proxy objects, if you're not familiar with them, are kind of new to JavaScript. But basically what they allow us to use is they allow us to use JavaScript in a similar way that you might use like a C# class, that we can predefine getters and setters. And how it works with a proxy object is it actually takes in another object. And you can set up what are called traps for the object. So I can write a get or a set that handles basically anytime you try to get a property or set a property, much like in other strictly typed languages like C#, I can define some of the rules around when this thing has got run these commands first before you return the value, or when it's set, perform these actions before you actually set that property on the object. Is this something you guys have you looked at these at all yet, Daryl?
Not as much as I would like to yet. Definitely interested in it, though. I think it takes one of the things that I really, really like about C# and having true properties, and kind of helps incorporate that into JavaScript in the sense that if you change something on a property on an object, you have access to the true setters on that property. And so you can build in some functionality, maybe, you know, attach event listeners, whatever you really want to do there, whatever you need to do there. It kind of brings that into JavaScript and really makes it a more robust, gives it a more robust application, essentially.
So, Tim, have you had a chance to use proxy objects at all?
Not a ton, quite like Daryl. I haven't had a ton of opportunity to dive into it. I have a little bit of experience, though, and from what I have used with it, it seems fairly easy to use once you have the initial part of it set up. Registering your listeners with it, it's quite easy once you have it set up.
So let me jump in here real quick, Tim. I think that you're actually referring to how we use them here at CodeWorks. So we actually have set it up with the observer and the listener pattern, right? So that every time a value is set, we can trigger event listeners and things like that, which is a great use case for the proxy object, is to say anytime a value is set, trigger some action. And we actually use it with the observer pattern to trigger and run those listeners that may have been registered at some point in time.
Yeah, that's the only case that I've seen them use. Of course, I'm fairly new to software development, but I feel like our use case that we're using them here, it works really well. And I like that we're showing essentially all of our juniors at this point. We're showing them that the proxy state at an early point. I think it can be very beneficial for them, especially as they continue to learn software development and get into C# as well.
Yeah, and I think the important thing there to remember is it is truly giving you access to those setters. And so it gives you a lot more control around what's going to actually happen when you change that property. So not just event listeners, but let's say you need to control what can set that property. You now have a method that can run and say, hey, in this case here, if this thing is trying to change the property, we're not going to allow that to happen, or here's how it's going to change.
Right. I think the other big thing, and kind of to build on what you're saying there, is those validators to be able to say, okay, is this valid data to set? And you could basically say, hey, you know, I want to prevent JavaScript from doing one of its default actions of just being able to extend an object on the fly. Maybe I don't want that, right? I don't want you to, you know, I wrote a class specifically for this. I don't want you to extend that class by adding random properties. I can wrap the proxy object around that class and now prevent that. Hey, if it doesn't have that property, don't allow it to be set.
Yeah, you mean you don't want to allow it to say, hey, you can take a number and let's make it a house now. Now it's a cat. Now it's a whatever.
Yeah, right? Because that's the biggest problem that some people have with JavaScript is that there is no true control around, you know, what is a plain old JavaScript object, or if even for that matter, class. And the proxy objects allow you to kind of say, let me put this middleman in here that I can start to define those rules to say, hey, if it's not the type of the thing that it already is, prevent this action from occurring. And, you know, those, again, if you're looking into it, that's if you kind of look at the documentation, they consider that section the traps, where you can essentially write, hey, here's the command for all sets and the command for all gets before performing those actions, do these things. You can also use the has. There's a couple different traps you can grab. Has, we've used for another instance as well.
Yeah, definitely lends towards a better true object-oriented programming structure.
All right, well, cool. Well, that's kind of all I really wanted to dive into a little bit, just kind of making people aware of this tool set. It is supported in all browsers, but of course, if you had to guess which browser doesn't support it?
It's okay, that one's going away, as we discussed
right.
last
yeah.
week.
If you tuned in last week, Internet Explorer, dead. I'm still enjoying that moment, Daryl. All right. Well, I'm going to kick it over to Tim. Tim, you are our news this week. You are both handling the news and you are the news. So what's up, Tim?
Yeah. So a little bit of news here for you guys. In case any of you guys aren't aware, the 7480 is a certification that you can get from Microsoft. It's to show proficiency in JavaScript, CSS, HTML. It's a good certification to have for any, you know, junior developer or even just developer that's been in the field for a little while. If you're looking to add a certification to your tool belt, I highly advise the certification, as it is also going away at the end of January next year. So January 31st, 2021, the certification will be no longer available to acquire. So if you're looking to add another certification, go out, get this one done. I know with my experience to prepare for this test, I got a test from Pearson View. I actually started the prep for this test back in March. And
before the coronavirus changed all the testing centers to close.
Exactly. Yeah, I was preparing probably like two tests a day for a month or so, and I was getting ready to go in and take the test, and testing centers were shut down, so I had to wait a couple months. Fortunately, the testing centers opened back up. I was hoping that I would be able to get in, you know, sometime this year still, right? And I actually remember I went to schedule the appointment on a Wednesday, and they were like 2 weeks booked out. And then I was saying, okay, I need to talk to Jake, right, so I can get this scheduled. And so I didn't talk to him until the next day. And so I waited one day. We went back to schedule, and it was now pushed out 4 weeks rather than the 2 weeks. So if you guys are looking to get this scheduled, I would say go on to Microsoft's website or try and get this scheduled sooner rather than later, because a lot of places are being pushed out. But with that being said, I was doing this practice test probably 2 days a month, trying to get as much of the repetition in or as much studying in for this as I could. Really, the test included everything from asynchronous programming, managing your program flow and events, of course, handling errors, exceptions, working with jQuery, really decision and iteration statements. And it was really some oddly worded questions a lot of the time. Like, well, yes, sure, this code could be written this way, but why would you want to write it this way?
Yeah, and I'll jump in here. Daryl and I have already also gone through these tests, and we actually did the C# one as well. And so, yeah, I kind of wanted to touch a little bit on just certifications in general and then circling back to that one. But I think the Microsoft certifications are really nice way for developers to kind of give that extra little bit of stamp of here's what I've learned, especially if you've come through a boot camp or you are self-taught and you don't have that certification of like a major university behind you. These certifications can be more of a way to say, okay, here is a third party validating I know what I know. And Microsoft, everyone knows who Microsoft is. If you've never heard of Microsoft, I can't even talk to you, I don't think. But that said, those tests are very challenging. And so congratulations on passing, first off. But as you mentioned, they do take a lot of prep work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the key. Speaking as someone who took the test twice, my first version of the test was dramatically different from the second version. And so the key is really just a lot of exposure. They're going to ask you all different kinds of questions. You don't really know how many in each category. My first one was probably far more CSS, which as anyone that knows me, it's not my major strong point.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because the one that I went, my test that I took, I had very minimal CSS. I had a couple questions regarding like canvas elements or doing animations or things like that, but very, very few CSS questions on that one. But even with a lot of the questions on those tests, like Daryl said, as long as you have good exposure or you have like good coverage of a lot of the topics, you can use essentially like process of elimination to figure out a good solution. You can say, oh, yeah, there's no, I would never use like this parse here or whatever the case might be. I know that I wouldn't be using that in this case, even though I might not know this exact question or this exact solution that they're looking for. You can essentially eliminate some of those other options and narrow it down to maybe two questions that you could choose from at that point.
Absolutely. With deductive reasoning, you almost always can rule out at least two of them for sure quite easily. And then you have to really look close at the other two and say, okay, is one of these actually going to solve what they're looking for? And so I think that's probably the big thing for sure.
I think one of the other things I'd identify for these tests, and having done the C# with one as well through Microsoft, is that they very much test the fringes of the language, whatever it is that they're asking about. With that, I'll say two things. One, if you are considering kind of cramming and trying to get these in before January, try to make sure that it's a language you're at least have spent some time with. I think the original goal and intention of these tests is you've been writing in that language for at least 1 to 2 to 5 years, depending on the language that you're testing in. Because I can certainly say that, yeah, there are certain things that it's like, okay, I would never really actually use this in code. I think for one of my CSS ones that I remember was like, I had to select like a class dot or a class hashtag some ID dot nth of type or something like that. And it was like some crazy CSS selector. And I thought, well, in reality, I'd just throw a new class yeah. on this and we'd be done. That's the only thing as I would say about those is they are definitely going to test your fringes. The other thing I will say is the unfortunate side of the flip side of this is there are schools and quote unquote schools that will train you to pass just that test. So I will also say in and of itself, a certification doesn't actually say anything. It bolsters the fact that, okay, I've been coding for this amount of time and now here's certification to validate that. But if you have no experience and you get the certification, it's probably not really going to make a large difference.
Yeah. I mean, there is the weight of Microsoft behind your name for sure. Like you said, it makes it a recognizable thing. I now do have some sort of measurement. But yeah, I would say the experience probably speaks more volumes than that for sure. Kind of circle back on what you'd said earlier too, put my two cents in there, if you will. I would say that, you know, I'm a newer JavaScript developer, maybe, 4 years now, I think. And so C#, it was my primary language, of course. And I would say I studied for that one far less and went through that one probably 3 times faster than the JavaScript one that I had to take twice. So
yeah, I definitely absolutely the opposite end of that spectrum for me.
And I'm still getting ready to do that C# certification as well. So that'll be a fun one for me too. But as far as back on the JavaScript certification, I would definitely say that's probably intended for somebody that has been working with that language, or the certification is more for those people that have been working with that language for a year, a couple years or so. When we start the test, right, they give a survey and they just to ask our experience with the language, and this lowest option of experience was like 0 to 2 years and for all of these. And so, of course, being, you know, a fresh developer, right? I'm only a little over a year into my development career. I was selecting the lowest option throughout the whole survey on that. And so I was like, oh man, because there was like 0 through 2, 3 through 5, 5 through 10, or 10 plus. So I definitely think that those certifications are geared for somebody that has been working with that language for a little bit. But it still feels good to choose that early option and still pass the certification.
I think to build on that, like one of the things that stands out in those certifications is you are definitely tested on coding practices that are almost 10 years old. One of the things in the JavaScript text is I remember you had to write XHRHTTP requests, like write the actual manual request. And very few people do that anymore. You're either using jQuery or Fetch or Axios library or any of those other alternatives. But this test basically says, hey, you have to know how to do this in pure JavaScript. So that was one of the things I thought that was also interesting about that is it doesn't necessarily reflect modern understanding of tool sets.
Yeah, and again, I think it's a version of the test you get. That first one for me definitely had some like Windows web forms and older things that, you know, I would just never build in anymore. And it kind of were a little odd for web development, but maybe more of the norm for older, old school web development.
I still remember my most unique question. It had to deal with a byte array, getting an image back as a byte array, and how we could convert that back
and
to
handling
an actual image.
The bit stream.
Buffering.
And being, you know, a fresh developer, I haven't actually haven't experienced that yet. So
just send PMI flavor of the week package for that.
Perfect.
Yeah, that wasn't one of the options on the test. NPMI.
No. Unfortunately, yeah, that was not an option.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for sharing your experience with us, Tim.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So this week for our deep dive or our kind of topic to go in depth, I wanted to focus in on, I'd done before, you know, open source software. And so I wanted to focus in on subscription-based software this time, kind of the other end of the spectrum. Subscription-based software is kind of the revenue model or the idea behind software development that is geared towards I have this standing project that's going to last for quite a while. Maybe take like Microsoft Office, right? And I'm going to need to continuously work on this thing and improve it. And there's going to be user feedback over the years. And I foresee the life of this project just continuing to expand. And I can't really keep putting out these new versions and expecting my customers to, you know, drop top money and buy a new version and convert everything over and make it all backwards compatible every time. And so let's just have this subscription-based model that says you pay for this service and we continue to work on it and make it better and value your feedback and incorporate it where we can. And so I was reading Reddit the other day, and this is kind of one of the topics that came up there. You know, any forum that you ever see, you have these users that are on there and, you know, subscription-based software development makes me irrationally angry. And they always want to talk about...
And they spoke about it so rationally. They said, it makes me irrationally angry and not like a bunch of things that we'd have to edit out of this podcast, right?
Yeah, definitely. That,
they just said
sure,
irrational. Okay.
For sure. Yeah. A little warning if you find that post. But no, their argument was, you know, I think it's supposed to be better and I hear that it's supposed to be better for developers and users, but I just can't see it. And I kind of get that, right? As a user, you go, well, why should I have to keep paying for this thing? It's just one singular product. It's just the same. Aren't developers supposed to write this software perfectly the first time before they even release it and think of every possible solution? And it's just not a true scenario, right? We know as developers that's never going to happen realistically.
Yeah. So I think that obviously this is an alternative to that idea of, okay, well, I have, you know, Photoshop 2008, Photoshop 2009, Photoshop 2010, right? And every year is a new release of the product that I purchase at its full release price. And two sides to that coin. One, if you were buying that new software every single year, you're basically in the same boat now with the subscription service. However, on the flip side, there were definitely people who would buy it once and maybe 5 years later then buy the new one. So I think that those are definitely those latter people, and that includes myself, who kind of look at that and go, I'm spending a lot of money and the changes are not drastic, and it's harder to see that change over time.
Yeah, there's definitely those two major sides to it, right? You have the software developer side, and then you have your consumer side too. And it's working in retail for several years before coming to software development. I could say the majority of the people that I've worked with, right, whenever it comes to programs like Office and Photoshop, they always want primarily just the one-time payment, and they just want the full package and to be done with it. Just because I don't think that they really see all those added benefits of all the new features and everything that those software developers are doing in those subscription-based softwares.
Yeah, exactly. As I build on that, as from a developer side, right? Like, I'm continuing to work on a product. I'd like to keep being paid to build that product.
Ideally, yes.
So, you know, there's that idea like, well, you should build that cost up front. And, I, you know, to me, the subscription model is just a different philosophy of the same thing of let's release a new product every year. And for some industries, great. For others, not.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the idea of leasing a car, right? Every couple of years, you get to go trade it in, get a little better one. I mean, it's hard to find a perfect solution for this, right? As a user, I totally get that. And, you know, I'm probably on that cheap end too, where I'm like, oh, I'll just either buy this once and then 5 years later, I'll when the features stack up, you know, nice enough to compel my wallet to open, then I'll purchase that second version. But from that developer side of things, yeah, I mean, it's really one of the only feasible ways to continuously work on this project and actually expect it to come out well, right? Your company's going to start, if you're not taking in revenue for this thing and you've been supporting it for 5 to 10 years now, like, what's that budget look like? How many developers are truly going to be working on that thing? It's going to end up being a not so great, you know, product in the end there.
I think the other direction you look at for something like this, and you talked about open source, and we've seen kind of this in that idea of right to repair, right? You look at the software that now exists in something as simple as a tractor. Your tractor runs on software in a lot of cases, and now you have a subscription for your tractor, which I think that's another piece that throws a lot of people. And not only that, but is that software is proprietary. So even if you were a farmer / hardware developer, you're out of luck. You have to have that subscription to continue to have your tractor to work. And I think that's where it gets into that other side of the coin on, is a subscription a good model or not? And in some cases, yes, and in some cases, no.
Yeah, there's absolutely the use case to look at there. A product like my favorite topic, game development. If you take a game, a standalone game, and it's just truly meant to be this single player experience that just happens and flows, right? There's not really a reason to provide that subscription model. That game has a set shelf life. You've worked on it. You might provide a few patch updates to get it to the feature set that you originally intended, fix any of those little bugs, but then you're going to be done with it. It's not really going to update after that. Switch over to an MMO or some sort of online game. Well, now, of course, it's much easier and more feasible to actually charge a subscription base there, because you're going to be constantly modifying this thing. You're adding in new quests, all of that software, right? I think a lot of users miss that in the calculations there. They're like, well, I mean, this world already exists and it's just one more little character here and he's just talking to me a little bit. No, there's so much there. That's a whole other deep dive, right? But that's kind of the thing, is you have to look at it as a software developer or even as a company. Does this business practice or this model actually make sense for what I'm trying to create?
Right. And I think that's a good touch point there too, is as I explore this as a company, right? If I'm the business leader, if I'm in charge of the software team and we have a SaaS product, right? I want to look at it in a sense of, you know, do I need to continue to support this product? And if I do, I now have an unknown amount of expenses, and so I could be supporting it for 6 months. I could be supporting it for 6 years. I could be some poor Internet Explorer developer who finally got a break. Sorry, I've beaten that horse to death, but that's kind of the other thing too, right? As I'm trying to bid that out and say, okay, what is this software? It circles back to as a, you know, if you're doing freelance work, right? I'm going to build a website for you. I'm going to build this application for you, but you need to calculate in, do I need to continue to support it after it's been released?
Absolutely. And that's something you got to get into right up front. You don't want to step into that pool without thinking that through. That's it can be catastrophic on either end. It's either going to end poorly for you or your user, for sure.
And I think that's truthfully where we look at it from a different angle, right? As soon as I switched into that mind scope, people are like, oh yeah, I wouldn't want to continue working on this client's product forever and not get paid anymore. And 100%, that's the subscription model, is we're going to continue to work on the product for you and you're going to continue to pay us to do so.
Yeah, you painted my house once. Can I just call you every year to, you know, come back and do some touch-ups for free?
That's how it works, right? A subscription-based paint service.
Yeah.
Hold on, guys. I got to make some notes on this. Say that again.
Yeah, that's actually,
And kind of the last kind of thing I'd add into that that kind of conversation is when you are kind of trying to figure out that price, understand that, you know, that's a conversation between you and the customer, because sometimes you are going to get someone, we've all heard of or had those clients that are calling you every single week. Hey, can you change this text to this? Oh, I was online and I found this font and I like it better. And, you know, all these little, like, it's little stuff, but it's just constant this and this and this and this. Or the clients that are like, hey, would it be all right if you also just added a whole like cart and checkout system so you could buy stuff off this website too? Like, that's real quick, right?
Yeah, just a quick little button there.
Just a button.
It's pretty simple.
Purchase.
Yeah. Just.
Yeah. And of course, that's not really covered within that. So as you are diving into those, any of those freelance projects, and, you know, I haven't done really as much myself, but be aware of that support and make sure that it is clear this is what is included and this is what is not included. That these are specific feature requests that would be an additional cost. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap it up there. Once again, if you have enjoyed these podcasts, please go ahead and like and subscribe on any of your favorite podcast networks. And until we see you again, happy coding.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Dev Team. If you're interested in learning more about our team or possibly starting a career in software development, reach out to us at BoiseCodeWorks.com. Follow us on Facebook and like and subscribe to this podcast to continue to receive the latest updates. Until then, from The Dev Team, remember, if you want clean code, wash your hands.